accession number 21024, Reel 2.
Doug Lakey, Reel 2.
Yes, they used disinfectants and pulled all the bits of steel out, and I was considered fit for duty. I felt fit for duty, but we had no equipment. I had nothing left. I'd lost all my kit, and I'd had quite a nasty wound across my face where a bullet ricocheted off the ladder when I was firing the Bren gun, and it seared across my face, and I was pretty well plastered in blood all across my face, and I had bits of that coming out 20 years after the day. But I went to my QM there and told him I had no kit and that I needed completely refurbishing, and he was a bit of a cantankerous old devil, and he said to me, I haven't got any kit. He said, your brother's only just down the road there. He said, take my Jeep and go down and see him, see what he can do for you. So I borrowed his Jeep, I went down to my brother, and their quartermaster kitted me completely out. So that was the July the 10th, 1944.
Was it for that you got the decoration?
I don't really know. I wouldn't think so, because all the people that were concerned with me, the officer I was with was killed, and we weren't interrogated at all. We weren't interrogated when we got back at all. 217 were very lax in this. Never once were we debriefed. And we found after the war that 220 Battery, who was then Lieutenant Goddard was their OP commander, they had a good record of everything they did, but 217 had nothing. And when they produced their book a couple of years ago, they could only rely on stories that persons could remember that were in there. They had no records whatever.
So the full name of your unit was what?
217 Battery, 112 Field Regiment, RA. We were in 43 Wessex Division, and we were supporting 30 Corps.
Were you in pain after the wounds?
No, a bit sore, but feeling very lucky. It's not a nice experience when you see a Tiger tank poking his gun straight at you.
What happened next?
Well, from there, we were involved with the crossing of the Rhine. I went to Paris the day after it was captured. Had a day there. They were still fighting from the Parliament buildings when we were in there, but there's all very happy city then. And then we did the fighting went on till we made our way towards Brussels. We were with the first troops into Brussels, where we were feted by loads and loads of people. Our trucks were full of grapes and wine and everything under the sun, and then we stayed there ready for the attack on called Market Garden, which was to capture Arnhem. And that was an unfortunate experience altogether, but we did the actual OP on the Rhine for the when they were trying to retrieve what was left of the red berries of airborne troops. I was in the OP on the riverbank controlling fire. We had an area where we knew these troops were gathering to come back from intelligence, and we were shelling all the areas just behind them to keep the Germans back from counterattacking. But that night was horrendous because they put the heaviest shell fire that we met during the war, I think, on that area down near Driel in in Holland.
What could you see during that work trying to protect the...
Well, we could see nothing of the actual red berries coming over, because the first night the Dorset regiment made an attempt to go across in boats, and they were swept away with the current in the river, and no one got across, and we heard them, they were being swept down the river in these boats, absolutely helpless, and the Germans just machine gunned them from the sides of the river there as they were going down there, and they had a lot of casualties. But I've met a chap since who crossed with the Dorsets and was taken prisoner, and he has quite harrowing tales to tell.
Any incidents that happened to you that night?
Well, we were constantly shelled. It was a pouring wet night, absolutely pouring with rain, and we stayed there. When this thing failed, we were not asked to withdraw or anything, and we stayed dug in on the riverbank for the whole of the next day. And the next night we were still there, and it was still pouring with rain. And then I heard a lot of muttering coming through the wood behind us. I thought it was Germans at first, but apparently it was the Poles, and a Polish division were going to make a second crossing attempt. But they managed to get a very strong swimmer of theirs to swim the river and put a rope across, and the boats were pulled across holding the rope, and they got across, and they successfully got a few hundred of the airborne back, who were coming back in the boats that they'd gone over in.
Did you see the swimmer go across?
I didn't see the swimmer, no. I didn't know how they did it, but I read afterwards that there was a swimmer that did it. I wondered how it did, but we were so busy ourselves doing targets all the way around the area, and we were being shelled constantly.
Did any of the enemy shells land near you?
Well, we were dug in on the river bank, which you had to be very unlucky to be hit, because it's got to come straight down. A mortar would have knocked us out quicker than the shell would, because a mortar comes down with a high trajectory and a steep angle of descent, whereas a shell has got to go in an arc. And so to get over the river, they had to just miss the river bank. So we were fortunate in that position. Then we withdrew to a village called Grosbeek, and there I spent the winter recording targets up and down the whole of the front of the Reichswald Forest, ready for the big breakouts in what was to be in the spring. They were planning a big breakout through the Reichswald to capture the Gok escarpment, Gok and Cleve, and we did the fire plan for the whole of the barrage, which they would use anything from 1,500 to 2,000 pieces of artillery to bombard it before they started.
What exactly do you have to do to record a target?
We use our map spotting. We work that on our map, and then we would zero one gun from the regiment onto it. And when we had that accurate, we would record it, and we would pass that position back to the command post at our regiment HQ, and they would work out the exact setting for each gun, because every gun has to have a different angle when they're firing on the target, because they're sort of perhaps 20, 30 yards apart and to convert. So first of all, you go back to your battery, and your battery zeroes all your guns onto this target, and then that is passed to HQ, and then the other batteries zero their guns in on the same target. And that is what we call a stonk target then. We did while we were up there, we were dug in on the Rhine, and we kept shelling the other side. And we recorded targets all down the river because we thought there would be, we surmised there would be, tried to make an assault over the river to push us back. And we zeroed the river all the way down, and there were some woods in the front of us, and I was sat in the OP on my own, and I suddenly saw hundreds of these Germans coming through the wood with boats on their shoulders, and immediately thought, this is it, and waited till they were in the river, and then I called for the stunk target down the hole of the river, and they literally blew them out of the water, and they had so many casualties that their padre came over and asked if they could have a few hours to pick up their dead and wounded, which was granted.
Did you see them doing it?
I didn't see them actually picking up, because we were watching the river, and this was, I suppose they were the other side as well, we saw the something of the commotion going on everywhere with stretcher bearers and such like. I felt very guilty about this, but I mean, it was either them or us, and we were there to protect the 7th Hampshire Regiment, and we were taking it in turns in the OP. Then we were using looking at the roof of a house there, and there was a toilet at the end of a passage there facing the front. And if you wanted to use the toilet, this was the one you had to use. But every now and again, the Germans raided this house with machine gun fire, and they seemed to go straight down the passage to the toilet. So you wait till a burst of machine gun fire had finished, and then dashed to the toilet and got out as quick as you could. But I went out with... We set up a command post... an observation post while we were there in a brickworks, not very far from Drill. We went out in the very early morning. We passed through the infantry front line, and we laid a landline out. Oh dear. Yep. So we laid a landline out, and we went into a brickworks, and this was about 3 in the morning, and it was pouring with rain, and they had these bricks all stacked in there with little roofs over them. And once we took 2 snipers with us from the Hampshire Regiment. When we got near there, we heard some heavy breathing, and we thought it was was occupied by perhaps a patrol of Germans. So we decided that I would go round one side with the sniper, and Captain Harrop, who was the commander that day, would go up round the other side with the sniper and try and surprise whoever was there. But when we got round there, it was a cow led down there asleep. But we set up an OP in this brickworks, and we could see into Oosterbeek, and we could see, we could even see the sentry on guard outside some HQ of the Germans there. And the sniper shot the sentry 2 mornings following. That's one instance which stands out in my mind. And from there, of course, we were suddenly called back to the breakthrough Bastogne, when the Americans were overrun in the Ardennes, and we were all sent down to the Ardennes, and we established an OP on top of a slag heap overlooking Liège, and we were to try and stop any troops getting through on the way to Brussels. And I spent the whole of 2 or 3 days on top of this slag heap, just observing. I didn't see any Germans, but one day I counted 32 V-bombs crashing into Liège, and they came over just above our heads on top of this slag heap, and then the engine would cut out, and they would drop into Liège and another blast. And that was a freezing weather, freezing fog and snow and ice and dreadful conditions. We couldn't use any air force or anything like that, and it really restricted our activities. But once that position was stabilised in there, we were sent back to Holland again, ready for the crossing of the Rhine, which was our next objective. And we crossed the Rhine. Where did we go from there? Just one moment.
You mean where you crossed the Rhine?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think where we did cross the Rhine.
Not at Wesel.
I got a feeling it was. It was the same place that Churchill went across as well, didn't he? But we went over the Rhine in a duck. That was the floating tank that they used to use to carry troops across. We went across there and established ourselves there. And we were then continually on the move after that. We had skirmishes with pockets of troops, and we were tearing off, and we were always on the move, it seemed to me. The next instance I really remember is we were to do an attack on the villages of Putsch and Waldenrath in Germany, and my battery commander was wounded and couldn't do it, and they sent up Eric Rankin, who was then, I believe he was a captain, and he came up, and we were all kitted out, our trucks were all painted white because it was snow. Well, whitewashed they were, and we were all issued with white zoot suits to camouflage us sort of tearing down through these villages. And we were on the slope, and we were to make one mad rush into the villages and take them. And Captain Rankin was sent up, but he had no zoot suit, so we ferreted around in the houses, and we eventually found a lady's nightie with some pink ribbon on the top, and we took that back and kitted him out with that. Unfortunately, my truck was playing up and it wouldn't start when the start point started, and he jumped out and said, "I'll go on with the tanks." So he got a lift with one of the tanks. Meanwhile, I got my truck started, caught up with the infantry, and we raced into Put. And it was, and when we got there, it was occupied by the Germans, but they were all in the cellars because we'd put a pretty heavy barrage down on them. And they were in the cellars with the chimneys pointing out from little heaters they had down in the cellars. And the infantry were just running around popping hand grenades down the chimneys. And we took a number of prisoners there. We had a little go with our hand grenades, but we unfortunate there was nobody in the cellars that we dropped them down. But we were stood there when it was quieting down, and there was a rumble, and the Churchill tanks were coming in that were supporting them, and they were flail tanks for flailing mines, and they came across the field I'd just driven through, and it was all frozen hard, the ground, but the tanks were flailing the field as they came across, and mines were going up left, right and centre. And then we realised we'd just driven straight through a minefield, but the ground had been too hard for the weight of our vehicles, and none had gone off. So we were very fortunate. After that, we carried on with our usual attacks and one thing or another, with mainly with the 7th Hampshire Regiment, and we eventually finished up near Bremerhaven, and three or four days before the end of the war, we were to attack one village near Bremerhaven, and it was considered a bit of a strong point, so they decided to encircle it, one company of infantry going around one side, and the other one going up the roadway to it, they considered the roadway was the going to be the hot spot. So there were two observation parties there, and we tossed up who should walk with the infantry. And I lost the toss and walked with the infantry. And unfortunately, I'd just been into a farm, and I managed to scrounge 6 eggs off of a farmer. And I tucked them into my chest under my blouse. And we were just walking out the road, and we were attacked by a machine gun nest on the side of the road. And we dived into the ditch. But I dived flat in the ditch, and I didn't break an egg. I thought that was very clever. But we continued our attack, and we took this village. But the other crew, which went round the outskirts with the other company of infantry, went over a landmine, and they were all killed 4 days before the end of the war. So it was very, I was very fortunate. And just a day or so after that, I was looking down on Bremen when a 1,000 bomber Lancaster raid went in, daylight raid on Bremen, and we were on a hill looking straight down into the city and saw this huge attack go in on Bremen. And it transpired later that my brother was one of the pilots of the Lancasters that were on the raid. That's how my war really ended up there. We had one very amusing day in Holland. We went out very early one morning. We had a tank as an OP vehicle because we hadn't had it replaced. And we had to go about a mile in front of mile and a half in front of infantry lines and establish an observation post in a monastery. And we were going towards this monastery, and this tank, the Remi had taken the gun off to give us more room in the tank to work. The turret still worked, but there was no gun in it. They welded a drain pipe onto it to make it look like a gun so as it wouldn't be conspicuous. And we were going down this road, and this platoon of German infantry came out of the wood with their fully armed with machine guns and the rest on their shoulders. So we swung the drain pipe to face them, and they all surrendered. They all said, "Kamerad," and put their hands on their heads, came up to us, gave us their weapons, and we sent them back to infantry lines. We said, "Just keep going, we can't bother with you," and we went on to the monastery. Well, when we got in the monastery, we got in the top, and we were looking over German lines, and we could see where they were. There were dugouts and such like, and now and again we'd see the odd movement. And when we'd been there about a couple of hours, as it got daylight, suddenly a barber appeared with a chair, and out to the trench popped a chap to have his hair cut. So we waited till he sat in the chair, and we'd already zeroed this area, and we sent a shell down in amongst them, which scattered them just for fun, and they all disappeared into the trenches again. And then after half an hour, it was all quiet, so they decided it must have been a stray, I suppose. And they come out, and the barber puts a towel around him and starts to cut his hair. And then we gave him another one. So we thought, well, that'll do us now, because they'll know they're being observed when this has happened. So we came down out of the tower of the monastery. And just after that, a tank came up and blew the whole tower away with direct fire. So it was just one of those amusing days. You had to have a bit of fun now and again, or just to keep you going.
What kind of binoculars did you use?
Well, we used just ordinary army issue binoculars, but we had what we called dog's ears, like twin periscopes for looking out over places where we didn't want to put our head up, which was very essential at times. You couldn't put your head up to look over banks and such like. One instance when we were up near Arnhem, we were relieved by the Canadians, and I was told to brief this Canadian sergeant on the position of the troops, etc., you know, where the German positions were. And I said to him, whatever you do, don't show your head above that parapet, this bank. I said, because if you do, I said, they'll blow your head off. And he looked up to me and he said, you limeys are all scared. And he got up and he walked along the top and he was dead in a minute. And he was only a chap about 24, a sergeant. And he just threw his life away like that. Sheer bravado.
He was a Canadian?
A Canadian, yes.
Where was that?
That was up near Drill.
What's a zoot suit?
A zoot suit is like zipped overalls with zip right up. We usually wore camel coloured ones, but when such an attack as that through snow, we were issued with white ones.
In the account of Normandy, you've given the one example of that day on the 10th of July.
Yes.
Were there any other incidents in Normandy?
Well, we had numerous attacks, actually, we went into. We did many attacks. I can't record the names of the towns we went into, but we did a number with the 51st Highland and the Lowland Regiment on different villages and such like. And a number of towns where they were taking towns, we would go in with them, but we couldn't do anything once they got into the towns, or we couldn't see anything in the streets and that. So I would just have a wander around and see what was around. But we were constantly being moved from one regiment to another. Whoever was doing the attacks, we went with them. When we crossed the Seine at Vernon to the hamlet of Vernonette, which was on the opposite side of the river, we crossed over in a duck because the bridge had been blown up and it was steep bank on the other side, and we stopped the night in a deserted pub because we couldn't go any further. And the next morning we moved on a bit and we established an OP, at least I was sent to this OP, in a haystack overlooking a flat plain. And I was sat in there observing, and I saw a German Tiger tank come and sit behind the hedge about 400 or 500 yards away and just stayed there. And shortly afterwards, two scout cars of the Recce Regiment came tearing up the road, which they used to. They used to probe areas to see if there was any Germans there. And this Tiger tank blew the first one all to pieces, and the second one went in reverse. I've never seen anything go in reverse so fast, and he got back out of it. But I think they had some system whereby they switched the steering or something, and they went backwards as fast as they went forwards. But we couldn't do anything about a Tiger tank because shelling it would do no good at all. Our job when we encountered tanks was to call in the Air Force, which the Typhoons, and we would designate that target by firing yellow smoke onto it, and we would call for a Tiffy target, as we called it. And so as soon as we'd given the target, we would start firing yellow smoke onto it. Now, one instance occurred in Normandy when we spotted about 12 German tanks all in one place, and we called for a Tiffy target, and we had a reply back that the colonel, who was called Big Sunray, said Big Sunray can see this target from his observation point. It was a long way behind us, and that he would control the target. And the next minute, all the smoke fell on us. And by that time the planes were in the air. We had nowhere to go. We just had to stay there, and we were blasted by these typhoons. Lots of the Hampshires were killed, and I saw one officer go screaming across the field, shouting his head off. He was so unnerved by this thing. But I think it's one of the worst experiences you can get, is being rocketed by Air Force Typhoons. But it's just one of the occurrences which happened. I mean, even in the attack on Malta, when we called for fire from the Medium Regiment, which my brother was in charge of, actually, all their shells fell behind us, not in front of us. And